everyone. This is JJ, the co-founder of Good Pods. If you haven't heard of it yet, Good Pods is like Goodreads or Instagram, but for podcasts. It's new, it's social, it's different, and it's growing really fast. There are more than 2 million podcasts, and we know that it is impossible to figure out what to listen to. On Good Pods, you follow your friends and podcasters to see what they like. That is the number one way to discover new shows and episodes. You can find Good Pods on the web or download the app. Happy listening.
And welcome back to another episode of Fantasy Football with Gumbo. My name is Ja, and today we're doing another episode for sleepers and drops. So every week I do an episode where I talk about some of my favorite sleeper candidates. These are typically players who are owned in less than 50% of leagues. And then on the flip side, I also talk about guys who I think need to get off your roster, guys who I think you can send packing into the waiver wire. So typically in the first half of these episodes, we'll talk about sleepers. Back half, we'll do a quick run through for drops. My first sleeper this week is going to be a Jacksonville Jaguars receiver. Christian Kirk, if you haven't heard, he's injured. He's out for the rest of the year. Suffered an injury last week. He won't be coming back. And that leaves a slot receiver, that leaves that position open for Jacksonville. Parker Washington is a wide receiver that I think y'all need to keep your eyes on. And I'm actually pretty excited for. Parker Washington is a second year wide receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's always had talent. He was a dog in college at Penn State. And I'm going to run through his profile to give y'all a little bit of background as to who this dude really is. Parker Washington stands at 5'10", 204 pounds. And at the combine, he ran a 4.48 40. So he's a 5'10 receiver who runs a 4.48. 204 pounds. So he got a little bit of weight to him. He got some, you know, got some muscle to him. In college, he had a 20.6% college dominator rating. A college dominator rating indicates a player's ability to dominate games. 20% of the time, he dominated the game. In terms of target share, Parker had an 18.5% target share in college. Why the fuck is that important? Well, a target share tells me how good you were, and it also tells me how much the offense, the coaches, and the quarterback trusted you. He had a pretty high target share in college at 18.5%. Fun fact, his quarterback was Sean Clifford, the backup third string quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. And Clifford and Parker Washington, they were boys. Now, in the Jaguars offense, with Christian Kirk gone, the slot receiver is kind of responsible for doing three things in particular. The slot receiver for Jacksonville, who runs a West Coast offense, they're responsible for primarily taking care of like those quick routes. So when I say quick routes, I'm talking about slants. I'm talking about outs. I'm talking about 7-yard curls. They're responsible for creating separation when need be. Christian Kirk was a burner who happened to play in the slot. Doug Peterson would go ahead and, you know, draw plays for him to go ahead and maybe get a mismatch against an outside linebacker, get past a linebacker who won't follow him down the field, and boom, maybe he breaks open his own coverage, you know, 10, 15, 20 yards down the field. You need to create separation in Doug Peterson's offense as the slot, meaning you need to have quick footwork and you need to be able to accelerate. I just told you that Parker Washington ran a 4.48. I know 4.48 ain't, it's not like a 4.32 like Xavier Worthy ran, but a 4.48 is still above average for wide receivers, believe it or not. Now, this week they play the Philadelphia Eagles, who we're going to get into in a little bit, but the slot cornerback for the Eagles right now is rookie Cooper DeJean. DeJean's a rookie. He's getting used to the scheme. The Eagles do some funny things on defense, so we'll see how he fares. But the third thing that a slot receiver is responsible for in Jacksonville is blocking, right? You need to be able to block so that way Tank Bigsby, that way Travis Etienne can run those, you know, like wide zone running plays, run those outside zone running plays, you know, turn the corner and get upfield. We'll see how well Parker Washington does in the blocking game. he's a pretty physical receiver. He has great yards after contact. So I think he can get his hands dirty and get down and block somebody. But that'll be the thing that'll determine how often he is on the field. Now, the Philadelphia Eagles defense, kind of like I told you guys, I've spoken about them before. They run what we call a multiple front defense, meaning that, hey, one play they might be in 3-4. The next play they might be in 4-3. Third down, they might try to throw something at you in a 5-2. This team is made with a bunch of like hyper-athletic linebackers, and they can shift the formations they play in and play out, right? They have really good gap discipline. They know their roles. They're high intelligence, high IQ players. In a West Coast offense, Parker Washington is primarily going to be running probably a lot of in routes, slant routes, drag routes. The only thing that makes me nervous about his position being the slot is that Evan Engram has kind of been incredible these last couple of years. He's been so incredible that Christian Kirk has almost maybe at times seemed like just like less than. I'm interested to see how this dynamic works with a backup slot receiver in Parker Washington competing for middle of the field targets with someone like Evan Engram, who many would presume would see maybe an even higher target share now that Christian Kirk is gone. That's the only thing that scares me about Parker's profile, but I think dude's going to be solid. If he's available, go ahead and pick him up. So this next guy I'm going to talk about is someone who I've brought up earlier this season. He just keeps coming back. He reminds me of one of my favorite superheroes, Batman. This dude's like he's like Batman when he returns to Gotham after a break. I'm talking about quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, Joe Flacco. Let me explain why I said Batman. I think kind of like Batman, he brings experience, he brings skills, he's determined, kind of cool, calm, and collected. Flacco to this Colts offense has brought a veteran presence. He's accurate. He makes smart decisions. Kind of like Batman once again. He's seasoned. He's calculated. He's cool under pressure. He, you know, comes back and saves the day. I just think Flacco and his experience has really benefited this Indianapolis Colts offense. Flacco knows how to read defenses. He makes the right throws. He makes accurate throws. He knows how to place the ball places. The only reason he's not a starting quarterback perennially in the NFL right now is because GMs don't want to build around a close to 40-year-old quarterback, I guess outside of the Jets. Joe Flacco is someone who I think is going to have a pretty decent game this week against the Minnesota Vikings. And let's kind of explain why. So once again, we talked about Flacco. He's cool under pressure. He's accurate and he is experienced. The Minnesota Vikings have a pretty strong defense, especially when it comes to stopping the run and putting pressure on the quarterback. Brian Flores has implemented a defensive scheme that, you know, utilizes their edge rushers. It utilizes their linebackers. Those guys rush the quarterback early and often. They stop and stuff the run. So I don't know if this will necessarily be a Jonathan Taylor game, but the Vikings are going to bring heat. Now, Flacco's cool under pressure. That's why this matters. When it comes to the Indianapolis Colts, they play in a... There's this formation in football called the ace formation. Let me explain what it is. In the ace formation, you have two tight ends, right? So you have two tight ends, two big guys who can both block and catch passes on the line of scrimmage. They typically play two wide receiver sets. So you might have Michael Pittman, you might have Josh Downs out there, or Adonai Mitchell. And then they'll have a single running back. The formation is cool because you don't know if they're running or passing out of it, right? You got two tight ends, you got two wide receivers, you got one running back. They could easily run and utilize those tight ends, you know, in a run package, or they can flank them out and, you know, have them go catch a pass. And next thing you know, Joe Flacco has four receivers. So it's really cool. Joe Flacco is great at audibling. So he runs that offense extremely well. He knows, he's seen every single defense the NFL has to offer. One thing Flacco does exceptionally well that has benefited someone like a Josh Downs is that he knows when to capitalize on those short to intermediate passes. Josh Downs has been seeing a lot of volume. He's been one of those receivers this year that's gotten a lot more attention. That volume has translated into fantasy points. And he's at his best when Joe Flacco's on the field. Flacco avoids turnovers. He makes smart passes. If he can't get the run game going, he'll extend the run game by, you know, capitalizing on those short to intermediate passes. Not only do I really like Josh Downs this week, but I believe that Joe Flacco will have a pretty decent game. I think he throws for a couple touchdowns. I think the Vikings make it a thing to stop Jonathan Taylor. Flacco's going to have to come out and throw the ball early and often. You might see a high volume of pass attempts this week. I like Joe Flacco just because I know he's going to throw it up a lot. He's going to play the Vikings, so either which way, he's going to be in a dome. So weather won't be too much of an issue. And when Flacco's in a dome, when the environment's controlled, and when it's just him versus, you know, these defensive coordinators he's been playing against for a decade plus, he typically does fairly well. So I like Joe Flacco this week against the Minnesota Vikings. I love Josh Downs. If you got him, definitely start him. I think Flacco's going to have a high volume of pass attempts, a lot of short and intermediate pass attempts. And this could be a good day for Josh Downs and maybe even one of the Colts tight ends. Shit, if we're talking about superheroes, I got another superhero who I want to compare this next dude to. I'm kind of surprised I'm even bringing up his name. I've never really been a fan. I ain't gonna hold you. But he's a new signee in New Orleans. I feel like he's going to have a role. And though my brain tells me that he shouldn't really have too much of an impact, my heart kind of disagrees. And if I'm going to give y'all anything, I'm going to give y'all, you know, something from the heart. So MVS, comparable superhero wise to maybe like the Flash, right? Similar to the Flash, MVS is kind of just all about speed. He runs past defenders. He creates explosive game changing plays, but kind of like the Flash as well. You know, sometimes it could be boom or bust. Sometimes he can have some unpredictable outcomes. So MVS is really interesting because, kind of like I said, he's a boom or bust receiver. The issue is that the Saints wide receiver core doesn't have any burners. They have Chris Olave. They have Bub Means, who I think had a high ankle sprain last game. And they have Mason Tipton. Like, those are their three receivers compared or side by side with Juwan Johnson and Foster Moreau. Not only is Mason Tipton, I think he's a rookie. Not only is Bub Means pretty inexperienced as well, but Chris Olave isn't going to be able to replace and do what Rashid Shaheed did. If Chris Olave plays any role, he's going to be a high volume receiver, you know, a possession guy damn near. The Saints need a deep threat. That's how Derek Carr is the best version of himself. Since Derek Carr has been in the league, he's been known for his ability to throw deep. The benefits of throwing a deep ball and having that available to an offense is it's extreme. Deep passes force the defender to cover more of the field. That creates the space for short and intermediate routes where Chris Olave and Juwan Johnson and Alvin Kamara can catch passes. It's an opportunity to score quickly, right? Those deep passes can result in quick touchdowns. So, you know, if you need to play catch up, hey, you have a weapon to do that. Derek Carr and Rashid Shaheed had a really strong connection on deep passes this year. Really strong. Shaheed was having damn near a career year. I remember he caught a touchdown against the Chiefs, I think, back in week 5. It was like a 43-yard touchdown. And when I saw that, I knew it was real. Well, bringing it back to MVS, he has a history of being a deep threat. He is a veteran. He didn't play so well in Buffalo where he was prior to the signing. Buffalo released him. And I think that MVS is a taller guy, so he's about like 6'3"-ish. He's obviously fast. It makes him a good fit for the Saints offense, especially if you're throwing downfield and, you know, you're trying to get into the end zone. So I think with Carr's arm strength, I think with MVS's speed and size, his veteran expertise, with the Saints running a pass-heavy offense that does emphasize vertical passing and the play action, these are all things that are going to allow MVS to have success. When you talk about play action, when you talk about a quarterback who throws the ball deep and is typically accurate, when you talk about quick score opportunities, Rashid Shaheed is no longer there, so who's the replacement? All these things combined together into a gumbo, into a soup, you know, it might lead you to believe that, hey, MVS does have some value. MVS could possibly be worthy in New Orleans. He did not play last week. He was officially on the Saints roster for week 8. He was a, you know, he was a did not play. obviously that was kind of a given with him being in town so recently. It wasn't like Devontae or Cooper. He's probably going to play this week, and for his benefit, Derek Carr is returning. Derek Carr is back on the field for the first time in the last few weeks. So Derek Carr will be playing once again. I think the Saints have lost like 5 or 6 games in a row. So they're going to be aggressive these next few weeks. They got to play catch up now. I think MVS as a veteran is going to come into this offense. And listen, I've always been torn about the dude, but I do think he has value. And I think he's someone that if you have a couple extra bench spots, stash him, see what happens. I think that he could potentially be good. Once again, I'm a Packer fan. I've seen the best of him and I've seen the worst of him. So maybe I'm tainted. But I do think MVS is going to be that replacement. Maybe not catch for catch, or he's not going to be like a direct replacement for Rashid Shaheed, but he'll serve a role that the Saints desperately need so they can go ahead and get back out there winning games. Yo, I'm having way too much fun with this superhero shit. The next thing I'm going to talk about is probably most comparable to a superhero y'all probably know, but it's Thor. A little bit about Thor. He's a big motherfucker with the hammer. Thor was exiled from his house, from his crib, by his dad for being just arrogant and reckless. So he got stripped of his powers. He got sent to Earth. He had to adapt to life as a regular motherfucker. He had to be a human for a little bit. And that was humbling, you know. It taught him a whole bunch of valuable lessons about humility, about how to just be cool, calm, and collected. When he eventually, you know, became worthy again, Pops brought him back. He reunited with his magical hammer, and that reunion kind of brought back his powers and made him wiser, made him a more just powerful hero. This guy is undergoing something similar. The guy I'm talking about is Adam Trautman, tight end for the Denver Broncos. Trautman is a really interesting career story. So before Denver, Sean Payton used to coach in New Orleans. And back in New Orleans, Trautman was a tight end who was drafted by that team. So Adam Trautman was drafted by the Saints when Sean Payton was there, and he played with the Saints for about 3 years. Now, Trautman during that time, he was actually kind of like a useful tight end. He could block well, he could catch well, and he had a pretty decent go of things. Payton left, Dennis Allen came in, and Troutman's numbers and career kind of, he got humbled a little bit. Upon last week, or I guess up until last week, he was kind of an afterthought, but he made his presence known last week when the other tight end, Lucas Kroll, suffered a brief injury. He left the game for a little bit, and so far, Greg Dulcich has been in Sean Payton's doghouse. So I guess Adam Trautman came out and he had a really good game in week 8. In week 8, my boy had 16.5 fantasy points. He had 4 catches for 85 yards and a touchdown. It was his first opportunity really getting those valuable reps, and he made the most of it with a 100% catch rate. He had 4 targets and 4 catches. And it's interesting because he does fit into this offense. Like, he was drafted for this offense. He was drafted by the coach of the Denver Broncos. It was just in a different era. I think Adam Trautman's going to come back in, and he's going to be a really great fit for the Denver Broncos, especially this week, potentially against the Baltimore Ravens. We'll see how the snap share works out. But when we break down the New Orleans Saints and what Sean Payton runs in Denver, it's really not that dissimilar. The Broncos run a West Coast offense under head coach Sean Payton. So once again, these are short, quick passes, spread the defense, create running lanes. They run like a lot of zone blocking schemes for the running game. So, you know, the O-line works together to create those lanes by focusing on areas as opposed to defenders. Adam Trautman is a really good blocker at tight end. And he's athletic enough to go out there and catch passes. He's pretty reliable in both regards. And I think that dual threat ability makes him a valuable asset. Right now, the Broncos are 5-3. They are much better than what they were last season. And Trautman is starting to emerge. For Sean Payton, someone who's trying to win, someone who's trying to make a statement, he wants to make the playoffs. If you have a guy in your room who you drafted at one point in time. He's starting to show some resolve. He's starting to, you know what I'm saying, take over a room that didn't really have, like, a guy. Like, Denver never had a guy at tight end this year. If you have someone that you are extremely familiar with stepping into that role, why not give him more opportunity? I think Troutman is versatile with the running and blocking ability. I think he has pretty decent route running skills, so that'll help him find open spaces in the defense. I think he's able to make tough catches. We saw that last week. He made like a one-handed catch that was, that just kind of showed like how strong his hands are, how good his catch radius is. And this week he plays the Ravens, who run a 3-4 defense. The Ravens defense runs a 3-4, so three defensive linemen, four linebackers. The two outside linebackers are primarily responsible for either rushing the passer or covering the flats. So, hey, Javonte Williams probably isn't going to see all too many completed passes coming out of the backfield this week, right? Like, the Ravens have two guys who are going to be designated to covering the flats and stopping him in the backfield before he can get upfield. That's going to happen. Now, the Ravens' interior linebackers, their inside linebackers, are the guys that are responsible for the tight ends, right? So they're going to be the guys responsible for Adam Troutman if he gets up the field. If he gets up the field, those inside linebackers are going to have to get into coverage and make stops. This is going to be interesting when the Broncos run play action, because as you know, play action is a fake run attempt and then everyone runs upfield. Typically on play action, the tight end is flanking out. It's a block and release thing that he will do. And that can fool those inside linebackers, right? They might think shit's sweet. They might think it's a run play. They might start rushing the line because, once again, the inside linebackers are responsible for not only covering tight ends and running backs, but the inside linebackers are responsible for those interior gaps in the defensive line, right? So those outside linebackers, once again, they rush the passer, right? They're covering the flats. They're covering the first 5 yards of the field. They're not responsible for stopping the run. Those inside linebackers are either stopping the run and flooding those gaps, or they're staying where they are and they're covering tight ends when they get to them. If you can suck in those linebackers by running play action, and then Adam Troutman can block and release, you'll have open space for an Adam Troutman or a Lucas Kroll or whoever the tight end is to get an easy pass, super open wide zone, and Adam Troutman can go ahead and make a lot of easy catches. The Broncos do run play action. That is something they try to implement with Bo Nix. Bo Nix is getting better by the week. I told you guys last week that Bo Nix was somebody to go pick up. If you picked him up, he got you 30 plus points last week. So I hope you won. Hope you won that matchup if you went ahead and did that. But I'm telling you, this week, just based off of the Ravens scheme, based off of Adam Troutman's familiarity with Sean Payton, the trust that I believe Sean Payton has in Adam Troutman, and what Adam Troutman does well, which is blocking and catching, those play action plays are going to be really great for him. The Ravens aren't good in pass defense. Their cornerbacks get cooked every week. I think they're one of the worst teams in terms of pass defense. So Courtland Sutton should have a decent game. Some of those receivers should have decent games. Adam Troutman may or may not go off this week. Like, he's a dart throw if you need a tight end play this week. I'm not saying he's a top 10, top 12 tight end for you. But I would stash him. I would keep him on my bench. I would see how he does. If I don't have a tight end, if I got somebody on bye, I'd throw him in there. Fuck it, whatever. But he's someone who I think is more of a sneaky later season play. And it's a tight end guy. I tried to, cover somebody from each position. He's my tight end play, or my tight end at least sleeper stash for week 9. All right, and the final guy I want to talk about for sleepers is Ezekiel Elliott, running back for the Dallas Cowboys. This week, the Cowboys play the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons are ranked 19th in the NFL in rushing defense, so those dudes are on the back half of rushing defenses in the NFL, so they're kind of vulnerable. Now, the Falcons run a 3-4 defense, similar to what I just explained with the Baltimore Ravens. So those two interior linebackers are responsible for stopping the run. Those two outside linebackers are rushing the quarterback. That scheme works in theory, But for it to work effectively, you need to have good inside linebackers. I can't say the Falcons have good inside linebackers. Where they have been susceptible this year is actually near the goal line. They have been susceptible in short yardage situations. That's where, you know, they've kind of bled a little bit. Where is Ezekiel Elliott used? Short yardage situations. Listen, he had 10 rush attempts last week when Rico Dowdle missed the game due to illness. They tried to sub in Dalvin Cook. I don't think Dalvin Cook's going to be used too often in this offense. Listen, I'm not saying Zeke's going to go out there and get you 15 points. I'm not saying that he's going to go out there, go crazy, and win you the game. If he does, cool. But the reason I'm identifying him as a potential sleeper this week is because I do believe in his ability to get into the end zone if they get near the goal line. He's playing a vulnerable defense when it comes to short yardage, a short yardage rush defense. And hey, if it happens and he goes crazy and he gets you 20 plus points, congratulations. But the reason I think he's a decent sleeper is because he might get into the end zone. Touchdowns are valuable. That's 6 points. If he can go out, if he can get 20 to 30 yards against the Niners, I think he should be able to do that again against the Falcons. And hey, maybe he puts up a halfway decent day for you. If you are in desperate need of like a RB3, a flex. Hopefully you don't need an RB2, but he's somebody to consider if you play in deep leagues and you don't have many options. And my deep league dart throw play, my final one for this week, is Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is the standard, hey, I'm going to get you 2-3 catches a game, but one of those catches is going to be for 40 yards. Last week, he played a pretty decent game with Mason Rudolph. The last 2 weeks, he's finished as wide receiver 36 and wide receiver 30. Now, because he wasn't used when Will Levis was in the offense, really. He wasn't used effectively, at least, or when DeAndre Hopkins was there. So the first, 5 weeks of the season, it's nothing, right? So in terms of overall ranks, he's on the very back end. But the last couple of weeks, he's been a wide receiver 3 if you play in 12-team leagues. Both weeks, it's a couple catches with the touchdown. Both weeks, he had exposure to Mason Rudolph. And I think we see more of the same. Now, Calvin Ridley and Tyler Boyd and Tony Pollard all did not practice on Wednesday. The reason I typically do these episodes later in the week is because by then I have a full injury report. So I can actually tell you who's going to play, who's trending towards not playing, and so forth. Doing these in the middle of the week is a little bit tough because I don't know people's situations. So I can't give you the scoops. I can't give you those, maybe like those ideal sleeper plays. But Westbrook-Ikhine is, if Calvin Ridley is out because of his shoulder, if Tyler Boyd, for whatever reason, is out, I think they're saying his shoulder too, which is kind of weird. Maybe that's just like a excuse they can have, like a veteran rest day. Tony Pollard is also questionable with a foot. He missed Wednesday's practice. Listen, man, if two of those three guys don't go, I like Westbrook-Ikhine to, maybe make another big play happen. He's a big, tall receiver who's great for the red zone. This week, they play the New England Patriots. The wide receiver 1, Christian Gonzalez, is going to be probably covering Ridley if he plays. If Ridley does not play, then Christian Gonzalez will probably cover Tyler Boyd, which in either situation, Ikhine might get some opportunities to make a play happen dealing with the DB2, DB3 on the Patriots. So he's a dart throw. Another situation, y'all. I'm not saying that he's going to go crazy. I'm not saying that he's going to be, like somebody who's going to just win you your week. But if given the opportunity, if he doesn't have to deal with, Calvin Ridley eating so many targets, eating 15 targets. If Tyler Boyd is hampered, hey, Ikhine could be somebody that you throw into your flex. And if he's been a wide receiver 3 the last couple of weeks, and now one of those starting receivers goes out, chances are He'll continue the trends. He might even be a little bit better for you. I'm going to throw a curveball out there. We're going to talk about the drops, and we're going to start talking about players that I think maybe you trade off your team. Maybe you put them in like the caution area. But I'm going to talk about wide receiver Deontay Johnson. Deontay Johnson has been traded to the Baltimore Ravens from the Carolina Panthers. I'm not even saying so much that you should drop Deontay Johnson. I'm not mad at you if you put him on the trade block and you start fielding offers, though. Deontay Johnson going to Baltimore is going to, he's going to be in a stronger competition for targets. Rashad Bateman isn't great, so Rashad Bateman's going to give up some of them targets. Zay Flowers, though, is a young second-year receiver. He's been the wide receiver one since he got into town. I don't see that changing. Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews are a tight end combo. They are instrumental to what the Ravens do within their offensive scheme, so they're both likely going to be on the field early and often. So where does Deontay Johnson fit in? If you didn't know, the Ravens run some college like spread concepts, and there's also some elements of the West Coast offense. But the issue is that Rashad Bateman is the stretch Z receiver that every West Coast offense requires. What does that mean? Zay Flowers works the inside, and likely Deontay Johnson's going to be what he's always been, which is that inside and breaking receiver, getting you, you know, 9, 10, 11 yards a catch. Lamar Jackson is a dual threat quarterback with the best running back in football right now, Derrick Henry, in the backfield. Deontay won't be the first option because that'll be D. Henny. He may not be the second option because Lamar will just keep the ball and run. And I can't say he's going to be the third option because Zay Flowers is pretty good. Zay Flowers is pretty good. Deontay might be better at this point of his career, but for a fifth and a sixth round pick, I mean, I don't think they're going to give up that many targets or take that many targets from Zay. Now, you have Mark Andrews, who's picking up steam, and over the last few years has been a favorite target for Lamar. So Deontay might come into this offense and be, at best, the third favorite option. D. Henny, Flowers, maybe a Deontay or Mark Andrews, one of the two. So, I think there's going to be competition for targets. I think there's going to be a change in his offensive role. And I think that defenses are going to be focused on him. It's a weird mix of having a competition for targets. It's a weird mix of playing a slightly adjusted role in the Ravens, you know, run heavy offense. And it's a weird mix of being the first person or being the person that teams are going to put their CB1s against, right? Like when he plays the Broncos, he's getting Patrick Surtain. When he plays the Packers, he's getting Jaire Alexander. He's going to get the DB1. When they play Miami, he's going to get, he's going to get Jalen Ramsey. I couldn't think of his name. But Johnson's going to be covered by not only the DB1, but it's going to be an offense that does not pass the ball as often. And it's also going to be an offense that has a lot of weapons around him. At least in Carolina, he was the primary target. It was him and then Chuba Hubbard. At least in Pittsburgh, he was the primary target. George Pickens came in late, but Deontay Johnson, during most of his time in Pittsburgh, was the guy. He's coming into an offense to where he has more competition than he's ever had in Pittsburgh or in Carolina. Derrick Henry, Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews, Rashad Bateman, right? Isaiah Likely. We'll see how that works and we'll see how he adjusts. But if somebody's in my DMs, if somebody's asking for him in a trade, I don't hate you maximizing his value. He's ranked pretty high so far on the season. He's a top 20 receiver on the season. I'm not mad at you if you trade him for like a viable wide receiver too, if you can still get it. Or I'm sorry, Deontay is ranked as wide receiver 31 this year. So, hey, if you can go out there and get maybe like a capable wide receiver 3, that can give you a few boom weeks, right? Somebody who can go out there and win you weeks. I don't think Deontay Johnson's going to win people weeks. I think at best he'll be consistently slightly less than what he currently is. But if you can go out there and you can trade for like a JSN, if you can go out there and trade him for like a Xavier Worthy or like a T. Higgins, I like those players. And I like the ability to go ahead and break games. So those are some guys I'm looking at if I'm looking to trade away Deontay Johnson. Zach Moss, you can probably drop off your rosters. His snap share has been decreasing since the beginning of the year. In week two, he had an 80% snap share. In week three, it went down to 76. In week four, it was at 60%. By week six, it was down to 45%. Week seven is 49%. He hasn't had double-digit carries since week four against the Carolina Panthers, who were just a bad team. His upcoming schedule includes the Baltimore Ravens defense, the Los Angeles Chargers defense, a bye, then the Steelers defense, the Cowboys defense, likely with Micah Parsons back, and the Tennessee Titans run defense, the Browns run defense, and the Broncos. He might be usable in two games, unless there's an injury to Chase Brown. You can drop him off your rosters. I don't think you'll regret it too much. I hate saying this because he's been a legend. He's done so well for so many of us over the years. He's a wide receiver that's in Chicago. Ideally, he gets the fuck out of Chicago. But yeah, we're talking about Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen, over the course of the season, he's been injured. He's missed a couple of games. When he was healthy, not very productive. He has one game with more than four catches, which was week six, where he had five catches. And Keenan Allen just has not been good. In five games, he's finished as the wide receiver 62, wide receiver 75, the wide receiver 57, the wide receiver 65, and then he had the big breakout game week six in Jacksonville over in London, where he just happened to catch two touchdowns on his five catches. So two of his five catches went for touchdowns, which statistically is an anomaly. He's 32 years old. The offense has Cole Kmet, who's hyper-involved as a tight end in the offense. It has DJ Moore, who's the ex-receiver that they just paid big bucks to. It has Roma Dunze, who they spend top 10 draft capital on. DeAndre Swift is picking it up since the beginning of the season. Swift, over the past few games, is seeing no less than 16 carries. He has a touchdown in four straight games. Even in the nasty offensive game that the Bears played against Washington, DeAndre Swift had a touchdown, 129 yards. He was someone, if you follow Gumbo in the summertime, I was telling y'all he was going to be a top 10 running back. You could check our page. We said it there. But the team has about three weapons that come before him. And Cole Kmet, DJ Moore, DeAndre Swift, and at this point, I think you could even put Roma Dunze. He's a back-end option. Hopefully, he gets lucky and catches a touchdown for you. But if he doesn't get into the end zone, he's not providing enough volume to do much for you. I'm not saying drop him this week. The Bears seem to have a really easy schedule rest of season for their receivers. A lot of green matchups if y'all play on sleeper. But honestly, man, this is the crunch of the season. If you're 3-5, if you're, you know what I'm saying, 2-6, if you are, shit, if you're 4-3 or 4-4, like, you got to start winning games, bro. You got 6 weeks left to make a push for the playoffs. If Keenan Allen ain't getting it done, if he's taking up a bench slot and you got 5 to 6 more games to do something, and maybe you see something nice on the waiver wire, maybe you see something out there that could get you more than 10 points, you have a stronger faith in somebody who's getting deeper depth of target, somebody who's more of a primary option on his offense. Hey, man, like, I'm not mad at you if you go out there and you pick him up. I'm not mad at you if you go out there and consider dropping Keenan Allen. Because of his name value, his experience, and his veteran presence, and because the Bears just had a really bad game against the Commanders last week, maybe give it one more week just to see what he does. Maybe he can earn your trust back. But yeah, dog, he's damn near droppable. On the season, Keenan Allen just has not been very effective. And right now, he ranks as the wide receiver 78 in all of fantasy football. Our next drop candidate is a quarterback who was just benched this week. We're talking about Anthony Richardson, quarterback for the Colts. I'm dropping him. My rule with fantasy football and redraft, one quarterback leagues. If you are not a starting quarterback, you cannot be on my roster. Makes no sense. Listen, the only way I see him getting his job back is if Joe Flacco goes down, which is possible because Joe Flacco's older. Those smaller injuries kind of impact him a little bit more. Anthony Richardson just isn't a good NFL quarterback yet. He shouldn't have been drafted as early as he was drafted. He can't throw very well. He makes a couple decent throws throughout the game that, granted, the receivers maybe don't come down with all the time. But because he so inconsistently throws decent balls, the receivers run everything half-assed. You could put some blame on the receivers for that. But also, like, dog, you got to be more consistent. When Flacco comes into that offense, they look completely different. Listen, he's not starting. He's not playing. He's not worth the bench slot. If he does get his job back, outside of injury, it's not going to be until maybe end of the season, playoff push, something like that. Maybe they lose enough games to where they're not in the race anymore. It'll be some shit to where they're throwing away their season and they don't give a fuck anymore. But yeah, it's probably over for his 2024 campaign, unless something happens to Joe Flacco. He just doesn't run the offense well. He needs to sit down and watch. He came into the league starting as someone who needed reps, which I understand. You want to give the guy reps. You want to get him out there, let him play a little bit. But like, he just needs some more development. And I'm not saying that he doesn't have a future. I'm not saying that you drop him in Dynasty. But the guy's not starting. We're getting into crunch time. The playoffs are soon. I don't want to lead you guys the wrong way. I don't give a fuck about upside right now, especially at a quarterback position. If you're playing in one quarterback leagues, if you play in Superflex, maybe you have more of a reason to keep him on your bench. Maybe you want to wait a week to see if Joe Flacco can, you know, hold it down against this strong Minnesota defense that they're about to play on Sunday Night Football. But yeah, he's droppable. Go get somebody who can actually help your team put up points these next few weeks. This is crunch time, y'all. If they ain't doing it now, they got to go. You can't afford to wait unless you are, you know, top half of the league, unless you are damn near borderline guaranteed a playoff entry. If you're kind of closer to that threshold, you can't afford to hold him on your roster. He's taking up valuable space that could be used by somebody who can put points up for your team. I ain't got nothing else. Gave y'all about 45 minutes of some of my thoughts. Let me know yours. Tweet us on X, Twitter, whatever the fuck you call it, at GumboPod. If you are confused on any of the socials, just type in Fantasy Football with Gumbo and you'll find us. We're the, you know, big orange bowl of gumbo. But until we meet again, I hope y'all get a dub this week. I hope I'm able to help you guys in any way, shape, form, or fashion. And I'll talk to you guys next week. I love y'all. Good luck. Peace.